Hi, everyone. I'm Tara Mont, and you're listening to the Trust and Thrive with Tara Mont podcast, where you can find a new episode released every Thrive Thursday. I am a current clinical psychology graduate student, passionate about all things to do with mental health, relationships, healing, self-reflection, and other topics that influence us in our everyday lives. I created this podcast to hopefully inspire others to live their most authentic life and to share insightful and honest conversations with everyday individuals and informed professionals. Although the show is not a replacement for therapy, I hope the conversations had can inspire you to look within, to practice self-compassion, to gain more awareness, and to trust the process of your unique journey. If you resonate with the message of Trust and Thrive, make sure to subscribe and stay tuned. You can also stay connected by following me on Instagram at Trust and Thrive. Thank you for being here. Now let's get right into this week's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Trust and Thrive with me, Tara Mont. So for this week's episode, I thought it would be important to share this around National Eating Disorders Awareness Week, which was last week. So this week's guest is Jennifer Rowland. Jennifer is a therapist and founder of the Eating Disorder Center in Maryland. She specializes in working with adolescents and adults with eating disorders, including anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorder, body image issues, anxiety, and depression. Jennifer has experience working in a variety of settings, including an outpatient mental health clinic, residential programs for adolescents, and a sexual assault crisis hotline. Jennifer has been named as one of the top eating disorder experts in the world by Balance Eating Disorder Treatment Center. She gives talks about eating disorders at national eating disorder conferences, therapy centers, and colleges. She is an expert writer for the Huffington Post and Psychology Today. So in this episode, as you can tell, we touch on eating disorders, eating disorder recovery. In this episode, sometimes the signs are not so clear. It's not the extreme example we may see in movies and media, but it doesn't mean we can't reach out for help. So we also touch on mental health. We touch on the effects of social media and diet culture. So we dive deep into these topics. I hope you enjoy. I really appreciate Jennifer for being here, for opening up. She definitely has a lot going on, as you can see on her Instagram, which is at Jennifer_Rowland. And she co-wrote a book, which is coming out soon. So make sure to follow her for more info. And if you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to let her know at Jennifer_Rowland on Instagram. And you can also reach me at Trust and Thrive. So I hope you enjoy this episode and feel less alone, whether or not you know someone or you have recovered or experiencing an eating disorder. I hope you know you are not alone and that episode touches on other important topics that relate to anyone. You know, social media, what we see, mental health, struggles, boundaries, listening to yourself and honoring your truth, reflecting on your values. There are definitely some great takeaways. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. And that being said, let's get right into it with Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So can you first start off telling us what you do and what specific area you focus on as a therapist?
Sure. So I am an eating disorder therapist and also the founder of the Eating Disorder Center, which is therapy and coaching in a bunch of different states in the United States. My primary specialty is eating disorders, body image issues, anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder, and OSFED. And then I also work with, you know, comorbid issues like depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, that kind of thing.
Amazing. And can you share what inspired you to get into this field and even maybe start your Instagram? And did you expect so many people to resonate?
Yeah, so I got into this field just because I've always been a very empathetic person. I think ever since I was a little kid, I remember seeing people on the street who were homeless and thinking like that could be me and having a lot of empathy, which I think is not always the case for kids. So I knew I wanted to be in a helping profession. And then I went to my own therapy freshman year of college And then after going through my own recovery journey, that's what ultimately motivated me to become an eating disorder therapist. In terms of Instagram, it's hard to remember because I feel like it's been a couple of years now, but my Instagram was actually just like a regular personal Instagram sharing random pictures that nobody followed. And then at some point it kind of transitioned into talking about things that I'm passionate about, like recovery and anti-diet stuff. And then it kind of just took off from there. But honestly, I think I forget that people follow me on Instagram and like see what I post. I'm always surprised when somebody's like, oh, I talked to like a friend whose sister follows you on Instagram and finds it helpful, because I think I still post as if it was like me and my 5 followers that I had when I first started, to be honest.
Well, that's awesome. And I think that's why people like it so much. I think people relate to that. I brought that up because it's so easy to fall into that dark hole on Instagram or any social media page of like just the diet culture or just the fitness Instagram. And that's all you see. And I know I've seen that at one point, and like discovering a whole different section has been so helpful. And so can you, before we even touch on these specific topics, just touch on the importance of maybe being intentional with your feed and what you see and how you can really decide, you know, what goes into your head like every day from just who you follow?
Yeah. So I think this is something really powerful I did in my own recovery. At the time, I was following a lot of like wellness people on social media and Fitspiration people. And I thought that it was like motivating me, but obviously it was just keeping me sick and in my disorder. So I remember like in my own recovery, and this is what I recommend to clients, is going in and unfollowing or muting people. And it doesn't matter to me if it's like your cousin. Like, I'm not going to lie, I unfollowed a cousin because she was promoting one of those like MLM schemes about like, I can't remember what it was now, but one of those like stomach wraps or something. So the thing is, you don't have to unfollow people. You can mute them where you don't see their content. But my rule of thumb is anybody that makes you feel badly about yourself, feeds your eating disorder, feeds that like comparison mindset, and then adding in people who are uplifting, who inspire you. And one thing I think is especially important is adding in people in bodies that are your size and bigger, and like showing yourself diverse bodies, because that's actually like one of the most research proven ways to improve body image is by changing the images that you see.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a good point too, because I think a lot of us have internalized fat phobia without even realizing, just because of the messages we see. And so in general, for someone who may be struggling with an eating disorder, but they may not realize because it's not the stereotypical extreme example you see in movies and media, what are some maybe signs that you can reach out for help and even ask someone or have that support?
Yeah. So there's a lot of warning signs, and of course it can vary, but I would say strange or unusual use of condiments or diet drinks. And this was a big one for me. Also, you know, avoiding social outings where food is going to be around, isolating yourself from other people, starting to get secretive around food. Maybe if you live with the person, you start to find like cartons of food, or food is going missing more quickly, you know, if they're struggling with a binging component of their eating disorder. You know, obviously body changes can happen, but there are plenty of people with eating disorders who don't have body changes. So we don't want to rely on that. But those are just a few of the warning signs. And I guess another big last one to mention is thinking about food a lot, looking up recipes, like making it kind of the focus of your day. That's another big warning sign.
Those are such great points. And I think for many people who grow up in cultures even, or like family environments, maybe where they focus on looks or they focus on, you know, you may grow up with parents who talk about it a lot. And so for someone who is so used to that type of environment, what are some ways, I know we talked about even diversifying your feed, what are some ways you can even, you know, just explore different like priorities and values if you're so used to that?
Yeah. So I think definitely going to therapy can be really useful. But in terms of the values piece, acceptance and commitment therapy is like huge on looking at values. And one question that they have you ask yourself is to say like you're in your 80s or 90s looking back on your life, and you answer 3 questions, which include, I wish I would have spent less time doing this. I wish I would have spent more time doing this. And if I could go back to whatever age you are present and change something moving forward, I would change this. So it's just looking at, because when I think about those questions, it's most people aren't going to say, I wish I spent more time scrolling through TikTok, right? So it helps to clarify your values. And I think also exploring hobbies that have nothing to do with food in your body is another great one too.
And whether it comes to food or any other topic, I think when you maybe have certain realizations, you may lose relationships. You may shift as like the more you change, the more you may be going to not relate to certain people who, you know, maybe that's all you talked about before. And so do you mind sharing even how normal that is, that you may upset people, you may have to distance yourself if there are triggers that do affect you, and how your healing is most important?
Yeah, it's so normal because unfortunately, like, diet culture almost can feel like a bit of like a cult. At times, I'm just speaking as someone who's newly on TikTok, and just the amount of diet culture and the anger that people get over saying something like, you deserve to be able to eat regular pasta if you don't have a medical condition, that like enrages people, right? So if there are people in your life who are used to colluding with you, talking about diets, like talking to you about their workout, that's going to be a shift for them. The shift is going to be, if somebody has invested a lot of time and energy into diet culture, into shrinking their body, and then they see that somebody else has opted out, that can feel very threatening.
Yeah, definitely. And so do you think boundaries in general are like key in this situation, whether it is like even just social media boundaries or emotional boundaries with friends and family?
Yeah, I think boundaries are super important if somebody is talking about their diet around you or doing things that are triggering that they have control over. I think that's super important. And I think working on strengthening your belief system at the same time, because the example I like to give is, let's say, you know, I have a family member who's super into this one politician that I hate, right? Them going on and on about this politician is unlikely to change my mind. And that's because I'm strong in my belief that this politician is crap. But if I'm wavering in my belief about my body, about the way that I'm eating, I'm more susceptible. So both setting boundaries and working on strengthening your own beliefs.
Definitely. And even just, you know, I think so many people have misconceptions on what it looks like to have an eating disorder. Like, you have to look a specific way or you have to talk a specific way. So are there even just a few myths you hear very often?
Yeah, so many. So I guess one myth would be people with eating disorders are vain and it's all about wanting to look thin and wanting to look like a model, which is, if anyone's had an eating disorder, you know, that's like complete bullshit. Of course, symptoms can show up around food and weight, but it's much deeper than that. Another myth is that everyone with an eating disorder is rail thin and looks like they're on death's door and is also a young Caucasian female, which is not the case. Eating disorders obviously don't discriminate and they can impact people of all shapes and weights. And I think another big myth is that binge eating disorder is just a matter of willpower and that people who binge eat just lack willpower. Whereas you wouldn't, I mean, maybe some people would say to someone with anorexia, it's less common to say, oh, that person has great willpower. I want to be like that person, right? But for some reason, it's seen as like this fatal personality flaw for people who binge, which we know is not the case, like at all.
Yeah, definitely. That makes me think of even depression and anxiety, like just don't worry about it or just be happy. Like those micro invalidations and big invalidations that people have when it comes to mental disorders. And so I did want to ask actually about invalidations. And, you know, you may be around people who are just like, get over it, or it's not a big deal, or just stop eating, or don't care, or even a microaggression like, you know, you don't look like you would have an eating disorder if you're not a specific way. So can you talk about how to deal with those if you're surrounded by that, and even ways that people on the other end who may not recognize they're doing that, like what they can do, like what might be better to say?
Yeah, I think it comes back to the boundary piece and expressing how those statements make you feel, like using I statements. So saying, when you say I look like I don't have an eating disorder, it makes me feel kind of invalidated, right? So really expressing how you feel is important and setting those boundaries. I think for family and friends, recognizing that, like, you can say to somebody, you know, I don't fully understand what you're going through and I can't, but I'm here to support you. And like, let me know what I can do to support you. And then even like coming to a therapy session, I have plenty of people who have brought partners and family members and siblings and all kinds of folks, coworkers, to their sessions. So having them come in and say like, let's talk about like, how can I support you? What am I doing that's unintentionally triggering? Because I'll have a lot of people who will say things like, oh my gosh, you did such a good job of eating just now. And it's like, actually, usually that makes people feel like shit. It's so well-intentioned, but in the heat of the moment, after somebody has like just eaten a meal, being like, wow, like you did a really good job, that usually is very activating to people with eating disorders.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think often people do have good intentions, and that makes me think of even like compliments and physical appearance based compliments of like, oh, you look so tiny. Like I've heard those before where I don't, first of all, you don't want that to necessarily be the focus. And I know people just maybe jump to that because it's the first thing you notice. But can you talk about how physical compliments may be detrimental and you never know what someone's going through? They may be going through an eating disorder or they may be struggling.
Yeah. So like you said, I think it's well-intentioned usually. And our whole society is so brainwashed by diet culture and fat phobia that we're taught that like weight loss equals good, weight gain equals bad. So that's naturally what comes to people's heads. And it can have very terrible consequences for people. I think number one, we don't know what caused the weight loss. So you might be complimenting an eating disorder. You might be complimenting depression, trauma, grief, a medical illness. And then I think also we're also emphasizing appearance, right? Which is going to change as we age and showing that like we value that person because of the way that their body looks. And number three, when we look at the statistics on dieting, because some people will say, oh, well, this person's trying to lose weight. Like they don't have an eating disorder. They don't have cancer. They're not in heartbreak. Like they're actively trying to lose weight. And when we look at the data that, you know, approximately 95% of people who go on diets will lose weight and then gain it back in 1 to 3 years. How are they going to feel when the compliments stop and suddenly it's silence?
That's such a good point. And even just on Instagram, I've seen like, I guess you can call it like fake body positivity where posting, you know, super Facetune picture, but saying like, I love my stretch marks when the rest of the picture is just not like it's so photoshopped. And it's so interesting because it still provides such an unrealistic image and standard for everyone seeing it. And so do you see that often, even just like hidden fake almost body positivity, but it's still fat phobic and it's still promoting this message like underlying?
Totally. So some people might get mad about this, but honestly, if I see another like large, I'm not talking about well-meaning people in recovery, but like a large influencer who's in a very thin body, bending over to show like non-existent stomach rolls and talking about body positivity, I think it's so hard because again, I'm certainly not saying thin people can't struggle with body image or, you know, can't work on body acceptance. Like those things are awesome. And like, how do you think it feels to see that stick thin person hunched over with like a literal, my friend Shira calls it like a wrinkle, a stomach wrinkle, like not even a roll, being like, I accept myself, you know, for anybody else to see that, like that's some people's aspiration. So it's really, it's sending one message of like, see, I'm like you, I'm imperfect, like I'm likable, this will get me lots of social media traction. But it's still acceptable because if somebody who's 300 pounds bends over and shows actual roles and says, I accept myself, I mean, they're going to get like terrible death threats. I've literally seen that happen to people, but it's safe for the super thin person to be doing that. And it's like, oh my gosh, you're amazing. And it's, you're imperfect enough within our societally acceptable standard of beauty.
That's so true. And it makes me even think of like race and say if like a white person was like, see, I've struggled with racism, but I'm fine. Like something just so, and I know like intentions are well, and I definitely want to validate every experience, but I can understand how that might do more harm in that case. And so now I'm thinking about a friend, for example, or loved one who may not be in recovery yet, but you notice some signs. How are some ways to approach them without maybe being too confrontational or making them feel like you have a problem if they're not ready and they're so in it right now?
Yeah. So typically what I tell people is not to comment on weight, but to comment on like concerns over behavior. So to say something like, hey, you know, I've noticed that you're not wanting to go out to eat as much and you seem more stressed out around food. And I'm wondering, like, I know this great therapist or dietitian, I'm wondering if you'd be willing to meet with them just for an initial assessment. And if they say you're fine to go, you're fine to go, but just to talk to a professional and kind of get their thoughts.
Definitely. Do you notice often there's like this stigma around it? Because I think a lot of people, when they think of eating disorder, like I said, or just any mental disorder like depression, anxiety, or even going to therapy for some people is like, I don't need to go to a shrink. Like they have this very specific idea. Is that something you notice often, or do you think it's getting better? It's changing over time?
A little bit of both. I think there's definitely that stigma, and I've definitely had teens where the parents are like, don't even say you're a therapist, right? Which obviously I do. But I think there's definitely that stigma or like, I have to have serious problems to go to therapy or like I'm weak or something like that. I do think like with Gen Z, there's a little bit less stigma and more people saying, oh my gosh, yeah, like all my friends go to therapy kind of thing. It's more openly talked about, but I think it's not totally gone. Like it's definitely still there.
Definitely. And even just, you know, when it comes to food guilt, for example, and like working on your own, I just think of parenting. My mind's jumping to parenting and how if you don't work maybe through some of your own issues, you may, without even realizing it, you know, provide that your kids may take that on themselves, that generational trauma cycle. And so can you talk about the importance of even like, if you're someone who is experiencing eating disorder, for example, and you are pregnant or you have a child and that's something you want to work on, what are some steps you can take that you don't project those ideas to your child?
Yeah, so I think one step obviously would be seeking professional help. I think even being able to like say to your child, like, oh, like mommy has to go to therapy, which I have plenty of clients who say that, you're kind of modeling that you're working on yourself, you're destigmatizing it. And so I don't think you have to be like perfectly healed to be a great parent, but I think actively invested on like working on that is a great thing. I think being mindful of how you talk about food and how you talk about bodies is also super important. But I think there's so many like implicit biases, which is why like some of it will be conscious, but some of it is truly unconscious for people. They just, it comes out of their mouth. And that's why I think like getting that intensive support around like seeking professional help is key. But, you know, really looking at not talking about foods as good or bad, not talking, you know, shit about your body in front of your kid. I think children pick up not just on what we say, but what we model. And so if we're saying, you know, I think all foods are great, but then we're modeling that we're not working to incorporate more foods, they're going to pick up on that like discrepancy.
Mm-hmm. And do you often see, whether it is with clients or people you've worked with, that maybe they think food is the only problem? They're like, once I'm fine with food or accept this, it's okay. And it may be such an underlying issue. And then when it, maybe it's not food, it's alcohol or whatever it is. So can you talk about how it may be so much deeper and that it's not necessarily, it could be food for some people, but it might be a childhood trauma or sexual abuse that they're working through, something like that.
Yeah. So I think food is often like the outward manifestation of what is actually going on internally. And I see eating disorders, obviously they have like a genetic link as well, but as both an anxiety disorder and a coping strategy. So it's a way that somebody is trying to cope with other things in their life. So often as people start to heal around the food and body piece, we can get to the underneath layers of the trauma, the depression, the low self-esteem, like the family issues, whatever it is that the eating disorder layer is kind of on top of.
And I know you brought up family therapy. I'm just curious, like, what are some, or what is your approach? Do you think group therapy is helpful or maybe not too soon? What do you think are the best approaches?
Yeah. So in terms of therapy, I think there's a few different approaches that are helpful for people with eating disorders. In my practice, I do acceptance and commitment therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, and cognitive behavioral therapy. They're very long names. And then I do family-based, FBT, family-based therapy, informed treatment for some teens, which is really where the family takes control over the feeding and almost acts as like a residential treatment center for their teen. I think ultimately families can be really powerful parts of like the healing process if they're on board. I think they can be really great allies in like helping their loved ones to heal.
And you brought up teens, which makes me think about college and how even that can be such a triggering environment, and even school or work situations. I know right now we're virtual, but there are offices where, you know, maybe even they have like the weight loss challenge for the whole office and there's an incentive. And so can you talk about how even just like environments and companies and schools really play into effect?
Yeah. So I think, again, just the amount of unrecognized diet culture and fat phobia not even being often recognized as like a form of discrimination, I think it's incredibly rampant, both in the workplace with like these workplace wellness contests and things like that. And then also in schools, you know, in nutrition classes, in you know, hearing other students talking about their diets all the time. So I think ultimately, we're basically like fish swimming in very polluted diet culture water, but only a small segment, I think, of the population sees the water that we're in. And a lot of other people don't even recognize it as a problem.
I completely agree. And I know we talked about in general, like the healing journey and recovery. I think there can be a misconception that maybe it is just a destination and then it's done and you never feel the same way you felt before, or you're never triggered. And so can you talk about how healing and recovery is a lifelong journey, and that how important maybe self-compassion is, because you may have those down days. You may be around someone who says something who triggers you, it triggers you maybe, or you're in an environment where everyone is talking about something that makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different, obviously, for different folks. And certainly, like, the recovery journey itself can be very not linear and full of steps forward and steps back. That being said, like, I don't think it's necessarily something that people have to, like, manage for the rest of their lives, in the sense of, while I will never go on a diet, because that would not be, A, I don't want to do that, sounds shitty, and B, obviously, that would not be ideal. And would trigger, you know, my underlying genetics. But I also don't think that people have to forever, you know, struggle with eating disorder thoughts and behaviors. But that doesn't mean that life is perfect and that you're never going to struggle again with life issues or any potential underlying depression or anxiety. So again, I think it's different for different people. And I think especially for marginalized folks, we have to have some compassion that, you know, if you're recovering in a world in a larger body where you're literally faced with like hate comments on social media every day, that's going to look a little bit different than somebody in a smaller body. So I think that is something that is often left out of the narrative, is how marginalized people often have to build even more resilience because they're literally like thrown hate on a regular basis.
And so what are some, you know, general, I know this is such a societal issue, but just in general, to like check in with yourself, what does self-love look like to you? And what are some tips on giving yourself maybe affirmations or reminders that you don't have to look a specific way or feel a specific way if you're literally seeing that all the time?
Yeah, I think to me, it looks more like self-acceptance of, I don't have to like love the way my body looks and like every, and that's maybe where the self-compassion piece comes in every moment of every day, nor do I aspire to that because we're all going to get older and our bodies are going to change. I think the difference is that if I have a moment where like, you know, I'm not obsessed with the way I look that day, it doesn't consume my whole day, it doesn't impact my behaviors, and I'm able to say, like, I accept myself, like, this is what I look like. I don't need to, like, be in love with my reflection, but I can accept it. I can, you know, think that I'm a good person and focus on the things that I think are a lot more important, which is where I've really found the peace, because the more that I tried to focus on loving the way I looked when I was in my eating disorder, you know, like, just hyper-focused on every element of my appearance and my body, the more flaws that I actually saw. And I think now that I'm not focused on trying to be totally obsessed with how I look and have my body look a certain way and, you know, have whatever look a certain way, I'm able to look at like how I actually want my life to look. So yeah, I guess for me, that's the practice, is continually going after your values, even when messages of diet culture are thrown your way, like refocusing on what's actually important.
That's such a good point too, because I think there is that like perfectionist healing or compassion. I've had that too, where like, well, I'm healing, it needs to be perfect, or I'm trying to take care of myself and it needs to be perfect. So I totally get that. And for someone who, for example, feels like there's no hope, they maybe like enjoy working out to feel good. Maybe they like going to the gym and they want it for a different reason. I think you know may go so extreme that it's like, I can't do it without being triggered or without it being to an unhealthy limit. And so what would you tell someone who feels like, you know, they want to get there where they can still do things that make them feel good and make them feel good about themselves without that negative message and without it being either or on the extreme level?
Yeah. So I think it really depends on each individual person, because I've known people who have had exercise compulsions who say, you know, I'll never step foot in a gym again. Like, that's just not a good environment for me. So I prefer to take a walk outside or like play with my kids or whatever. So it's going to be different for every person. But I think if you're in the place where you're able to start exploring like forms of movement that you enjoy, it's going to be about looking at like, what do I actually enjoy? Not what diet culture or an eating disorder says like quote unquote counts. So it's not like, oh, I definitely have to sweat or like I have to do a certain amount of time. It's just like, what would actually make me feel joyful kind of in this moment?
I think you brought up a good point of like being intentional and asking yourself maybe, why am I doing this? I've had to ask myself too, even with saying yes to something, do I actually want to do this or do I feel like I need to and fit this specific role? And so overall, this show is about living your most authentic life. And that obviously means something different for everyone. And so for you, what does living your most authentic life mean?
I think it means being honest about like how I feel and also not feeling like you talked about that I have to show up as like some perfect person, kind of like I just said, that it's okay for me to be like a person and make mistakes and to have days where I feel sad, right? That actually, I think that's the part of me that's very relatable, is like who I am as a person, like the fact that I go to bed early and I'm introverted and you wouldn't find me having a good time at like a super big party where I don't know anybody. So I think there was a time, like definitely in college, where I felt like I had to fit this like persona of like loving to go out and party and all this stuff. And it's like, I think just embracing like who you actually are and recognizing that the right people are going to be cool with that and actually appreciate that.
Definitely. And I know we talked about the connection between comorbidity of like depression, anxiety, eating disorders. Can you talk about how common that is and that, you know, you may recover from an eating disorder, but you may also deal with other mental disorders and that's okay. And it may be very normal.
Yeah. So it's pretty common. I don't frequently see somebody with just an eating disorder in my office. So there's usually a comorbid depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, substance abuse, or some of the ones, OCD, that I more commonly see. And I think for some of those things, they can be more chronic, right? Like, I believe you can live like an amazing life with OCD or with, you know, other things that, again, might come and go or be more chronic, but it's about changing your relationship to those things and like having a good plan for how you cope. So I think recognizing that, like you said, you don't have to be 100% over at like never have a period of depression again in your life, never feel more than like a small amount of anxiety ever again in your life, but it's about having better tools to cope with it.
I wanted to ask in general about the importance of representation, because even now I'm seeing a lot of like fitness brands, you know, having normal size bodies on their campaigns. And then people will comment like, why are you promoting obesity? Why are you promoting this unhealthy image? I guess, what are your thoughts on that? And is it something that you think hopefully will get better as more people see representation? It just might be so new that, you know, a lot of people aren't used to it.
Yeah, I think there definitely needs to be more representation. And I think what that is highlighting is just the rampant fat phobia, you know, in our society and how that system is upheld in many different ways, and just the amount of pressure that people are under to conform to that standard because they don't want to face the abuse that, you know, many people in larger bodies deal with. So I think we're going to have to see way more of it. And I think there has to be more, it's shifting a little bit, but there has to be more general awareness and understanding of weight stigma and fat phobia and how big of an issue that is, because many people do not even realize, it's not even on their radar, that that is actually a problem and a form of discrimination.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And so one of the last questions I want to ask you is, what would you tell someone who maybe wants to reach out for help, whether it is an eating disorder, depression, they feel like they just don't feel like something, they just know they need some help and they maybe fear judgment, they fear criticism, or they're around people who don't understand it and invalidate their experiences. What would you tell that person who maybe feels alone right now?
Yeah. So I guess I would tell them that in terms of reaching out from a professional, of course, you know, unfortunately, there are some shitty professionals out there, but there are also some really great professionals, many of whom, including myself, have like lived experience of an eating disorder, other mental illnesses. So there are people out there who are not going to judge you, who are going to want to support you. And there's a lot of people, unfortunately, struggling with mental health, especially in the middle of the pandemic. So you're definitely not alone. And any provider who's going to judge you for like reaching out or what you're dealing with, like that's a them problem, not a you problem.
And what you said reminded me, I think, of one of your posts. You said like the letters next to your name don't necessarily mean that you're not fat phobic or that you're not discriminating against anyone. And so can you talk about the importance of like even, you know, almost like dating, it's okay to go around and find the right therapist for you, and that just because they're a therapist or they have letters next to their name, that doesn't mean they're necessarily the right person for you and that they're going to help.
Totally. And as awesome as it would be if we could just like go and trust all professionals, unfortunately, that's not the case. So I don't care if they have an MD, like a PhD, MSW, any of the letters. At the end of the day, like you said, it's like dating, and this is somebody you're entrusting like your healing, your recovery in, like your life in. So I encourage people to interview them, like ask them, do you know what Health at Every Size is? I'll have teen parents when they reach out, ask like, how would you respond if my child said I feel fat? And some of the answers they get are pretty bad, you know, pretty fat phobic. So unfortunately, know plenty of therapists, including in the eating disorder space, who are fat phobic, believe in, you know, some real problematic diet culture stuff. So just do your homework. Like if they write, read the blogs they've written, interview them on the phone, because there are some really great providers out there too. You just have to find somebody who's a good fit.
And do you think gaslighting is very normal, whether not in just the therapy space, but even in the media of like, you know, you should look this specific way, or we're not doing this, but like they're selling you this message and want you to just pay all this money and then saying, love your body, but buy this to love your body.
Totally. It's very pervasive, even in like the quote unquote non-diet community. I won't obviously name names, but there's one particular very thin dietitian who talks about like letting go of food rules and food guilt. And like every single post is of her very thin body, like, you know, just doing various things. And so the implicit message is let go of food rules and look like me, right? And that's why I think like if you are a thin provider, I'm not saying you have to like hide yourself, right? But don't make your body the highlighted feature of your non-diet recovery page if you're in a thin body.
I mean, there's so many great points. And I wanted to specifically ask you, where can listeners follow you and what is coming up next for you and your work?
Sure. So they can follow me on Instagram. I think it's the same handle on TikTok, at Jennifer_Rollin, R-O-L-L-I-N. Or they can reach out via my website, which is just www.theeatingdisordercenter.com. In terms of your last question, I think it was a question of like, what's next in terms of my work? I just wanted to quickly throw out there that I have a book coming out in April with one of my good friends. It's called The Inside Scoop on Eating Disorder Recovery. So if you just type that into like Amazon, you should be able to find it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. And I definitely will include your links in the description of this episode. So thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jennifer. I know we've done an episode before on eating disorders, eating disorder recovery, but every episode, once again, is so different. We will touch on some different topics, some new topics, and I'm just always interested to hear different guests' perspective. So one thing I did not ask Jennifer, I literally ended the conversation. I was like, I didn't ask her about the eating disorder treatment center. So if you would like to learn more, definitely make sure to check out her Instagram at Jennifer_Rowland and the Instagram for the center at the Eating Disorder Center. You can also visit the website, theeatingdisordercenter.com. So I will make sure to include links to her pages, her website, and to her upcoming book, which you can pre-order. So that being said, you can follow Jennifer's pages to learn more, and you can also follow me at Trust and Thrive on Instagram. It was also National Eating Disorder Awareness Week, so I hope you learned a little more from this episode. If you've been enjoying the show, you can also leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes, Apple Podcasts. It's really quick and it helps the show so much. So thank you in advance. So that being said, I hope you have a restful rest of your week, and I will catch you all next Thrive Thursday.